This is the Downeast Journal on Public Radio East. North Carolina residents now have the opportunity to affect fracking policy. The State Mining and Energy Commission is accepting comments and suggestions regarding their proposed regulations. Lee Jenkins has more.
Since Governor McCrory's passage of the Energy Modernization Act in June, the commission has drafted a plethora of rules and regulations for the now legal process of hydraulic fracturing, or fracking. Fracking involves pumping high-pressure mixtures into shale deposits, causing them to crack and release the fossil fuels contained within. In North Carolina, the shale-rich basins ripe for fracking are located in Chatham and Lee counties. The process does run the risk of contaminating the soil and groundwater if both the fossil fuels and the mixture escape during the process. Furthermore, a University of Texas at Austin study has proven that the chemical disposal wells that store the hydraulic mixture can cause earthquakes. However, those wells are already illegal in North Carolina, and the proposed rules extend far beyond disposal measures. Commissioner Jim Womack.
We've written roughly 105 or so rules that address the full range of oil and gas regulations, everything from the development of a oil and gas well, the well construction, the site development, the water and waste management. There's a wide range of rules that have been written.
Prior to implementing these rules, the commission is subjecting them to public scrutiny. Fracking is something of a controversial issue thanks to its benefits and costs, and the commission would like to address any concerns citizens may have before they move forward. To this end, they've planned a handful of public hearings focused on discussing the regulation of fracking.
One will be held on August the 20th in Raleigh, one will be held August the 22nd in Sanford, and one will be held August 25th in Rockingham County, at the Rockingham County High School.
Attendees will be able to suggest modifications for the commission's fracking policies, either by speaking with a hearings panel or submitting a written comment. While the commission is legally obligated to consider and address all comments and suggestions, articulate, factually based comments carry greater significance.
The better developed the comment is, and the better researched, and the more logical and appropriate the comment, the more weight and the more gravity we'll give to that comment.
Those unable to attend the hearings can still submit comments via mail or email. The addresses are available at the Mining and Energy Commission's website. Comments will be taken until September 15th. Potential drilling can begin as early as 60 days after the General Assembly's adoption of the proposed rules. However, it could be several months before any operations commence.
The actuality is that only industry will be able to tell that, and it really will be determined by a number of factors. The price of natural gas and natural gas liquids, the cost of startup operations in the state, whether or not the legislature adopts our rules as written, if they change a lot of our rules, or if they reject some of our rules and leave an incomplete rule set, that could affect the startup operation. There are a number of things that could alter the landscape for the drilling company.
According to Womack, the very earliest drilling could occur in the summer of 2015. For Public Radio East, I'm Lee Jenkins.
People from Raleigh, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and points west will use Highway 70 to travel to the Crystal Coast this summer. But for many of us who live here in eastern North Carolina, we use this thoroughfare every day. That heavy use has led to a new study on Highway 70 and its potential to be a major economic driver for the region. Director of the U.S. 70 Corridor Commission, Durwood Stevenson, says a recently completed year-long study explored the economic opportunity that would come by expanding Highway 70 to a freeway.
Governor Martin in 1984 said every household should be within 10 miles of a freeway. Well, that's true in a lot of areas, but in eastern North Carolina, that is not true for most of our citizens. We've got about 2.6 million citizens east of I-95 that don't have access to a freeway. So US 70 used to be considered the main street of commerce in eastern North Carolina, and it has kind of deteriorated. It's become congested. It's become unsafe.
Stevenson says car crashes along the 135-mile corridor have drastically increased from 2011 to 2013.
The crash rate along that corridor is 465% higher than the crash rate along I-40. Is 65% higher than any U.S. highway in North Carolina. So it's become unsafe and inefficient.
In an effort to improve safety, the Highway 70 corridor from Raleigh to Morehead City will be upgraded to freeway or interstate standards with the elimination of at-grade intersections and railroad crossings, wider paved shoulders, and higher speed limits. The findings from the report, compiled by Sanford Holhauser Economic Development and Cambridge Systematics Incorporated, were released last month. It found that improving the highway to interstate standards would also prove to be beneficial by adding $1.2 billion to the region's economy and saving $56 million for existing businesses by the year 2040. Stevenson says the change would make the area more attractive to companies looking to locate here.
It's about jobs and moving people and goods, and you're not going to get jobs to come when people, just like the global transport. We put the global transport down there, and you know, I dare say most people probably west of 95 don't know how to get to it. We've had some major employers to take a look at the global transport and said they got everything we need except an ability to get in and out and move goods and people in and out.
Upgrading Highway 70 to a freeway would increase the mobility of goods to major interstates I-95 and I-40. In addition, the improved corridor would also be more efficient for the deployment of troops and equipment from the three military bases located along Highway 70. Stevenson says it would also provide easier access to the state ports in Morehead City and Wilmington.
People that are looking to locate commerce look away because there's no efficiency of travel. The vehicle mile traveled and the time distance is more important than the mileage.
If the entire Highway 70 corridor is expanded to a freeway, the study estimates that an additional 1,900 jobs could be created, with 600 jobs being added annually in communities outside the corridor. Short-term construction jobs would also be generated. Stevenson says new companies that decide to locate to the region will provide lasting job opportunities to people retiring from the military and young adults finishing college.
15 of our 41 counties have been losing population for 3 or 4 years. And they were losing population because there's no jobs to keep people. And our young are not returning when they go off to school. They're not coming back because there's no opportunity for them.
According to the Highway 70 Corridor's website, the report also examined the potential impact of not improving the corridor. It found that job growth would be slowed, with 350 fewer jobs created each year. The expansion of Highway 70 started with the completion of the Clayton Bypass in June 2008. Currently, a bypass in Goldsboro is under construction and slated to be finished by late next year, 2 decades ahead of schedule. The plan also calls for a bypass around Kinston and Havelock, and improvements already underway in Beaufort to replace the Gowans Channel Bridge. According to Stevenson, the only sections of road currently built to interstate or freeway standards in the Highway 70 corridor are the Clayton Bypass and the stretch of road between Kinston and New Bern.
Deputy Secretary Nick Tennyson, who attended our meeting on June 19th, what he told us was transportation is a long-term and highly expensive process. So he said, keep working and be patient. You know, you can't get to a destination unless you start. So we've started, and we recognize it's not going to happen overnight, but we got to stay after it.
This week, the House passed a bill that adds 10 months' worth of money into the Highway Trust Fund. The account will run dry by August 1st if Congress doesn't allocate $11 billion to sustain the fund until new funding or new transportation bill can be enacted. NCDOT Secretary Tony Tata says if funds go broke, the Department of Transportation will be forced to stop construction on 108 projects across the state, employing more than 20,000 workers. This includes the work currently being done on the Goldsboro Bypass. The Downeast Journal is made possible by our Public Radio East members in partnership with Tryon Palace, announcing Mail Call, a Smithsonian traveling exhibit telling the story of military mail and communications from the American Revolution to current conflicts. Last days now through Sunday at the History Center. Information online at trionpalace.org.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. Here it is, just past mid-July, and things outside are starting to look, well, a bit worn already. We haven't gotten to the doldrums of summer yet. That'll come soon. But it is time to look around and maybe clean things up a little and assess things, especially this year because, as you all know, we already had a hurricane. That's so unusual, almost unheard of from what I can tell in the records. And the trees are showing the effects. Luckily, the hurricane passed through very quickly and was not as damaging as it could have been. Some of you, though, may have had big branches split out of trees, or trees split in half, or even trees blown over from the roots. Others, the trees may have looked fine at the time, but now that a couple weeks have passed, you see lots of small brown branches mixed in, where they broke off, twisted, or partially snapped, but didn't fall from the tree. Where it's possible to safely reach them, go ahead and prune those out now. Make a clean cut and possibly reduce the chance for future pulling, peeling, splitting, and disease entry. And for those of you who lost really big branches or half a tree, now's the great time to really look at that tree and decide if it's something that can be safely kept in the yard and that's likely to survive future storms, as well as possible future disease and pest infestations now that it's broken. If it's something like a Bradford pear, just go ahead and take it down now and replace it with something more suitable for our area, maybe a crepe myrtle, although there are lots of other options. If it's your prized pecan tree, well, I know you're not going to take it down, but do look at the safety issues as pecans often lose large branches. And make sure that it's not over part of your house or your garage or somewhere where a person might be caught when a branch falls. And while you're outside assessing your gardens, look around at the other plants, things that have nothing to do with the hurricane, or at least minimal response to the hurricane, and more to do with just the fact that the summer is winding on and getting hot. Look in your vegetable garden. Did you lose squash to squash vine borers this year already? Pull those old vines out. Don't give that pest time to mature and pupate in the soil to infect future squash. Are some of your tomatoes diseased and brown? Remember when you remove them to get the roots as well as all the leaves out of the garden and to throw that away, not into the compost pile, because so many tomato diseases live in the soil and can be spread from year to year. Others live in that plant debris that you leave behind, whether it be leaves or roots, and again, are spread to future plants. Mark where you had tomato plants this year, and don't put them there next year. Remember to rotate. Although it seems practically impossible, soon it's time to start planting fall vegetables. So it really is a great time to go out and clean up the spring and early summer plants that haven't done so well or have finished yielding or that you're just tired of eating from and get ready for your next planting in the vegetable garden. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
If you like your country or acoustic music slick and highly produced, don't buy the following CD by Raleigh's Linda Dawson and Greenville's Patty Hopkins. One guitar, one fiddle, two voices, that's it. And the CD's title tells you everything you need to know about the music inside. George Olson spoke with Linda and Patty and has this.
When I receive music in the mail, the first thing I might notice is the CD's title. In the case of Linda Dawson and Patty Hopkins' CD, Traditional Duets, the first thing that popped into my head was they certainly didn't expend a lot of energy naming this disc. After listening to the disc, my review changed to Great Music, Boring Name. Boring or not, Linda and Patty somehow stumbled upon a perfectly descriptive title for their CD that somehow, after centuries of traditional music, is absolutely unique.
Traditional Duets was actually a placeholder with our graphic design artist. And towards the end of the project, we fell in love with the title. And
I put it as a placeholder because I thought, surely there are 300 albums called Traditional Duets. And the last thing I want to do is put out a record that's going to be competing against something, you know, much larger than what we're doing here. But when I went on AllMusic.com and Amazon and iTunes, I discovered that there actually is no other disc called just Traditional Duets. This is the only ones. So we realized that it said exactly what it was.
There are awards for truth in advertising. Linda and Patty will win one. There is nothing modern about this CD at all, beyond the fact about half of the tunes still require attaining performing rights through various publishing companies. Oh, and it's on a CD and not a 78 RPM vinyl record. And Linda plays an 80-year-old guitar on a couple of tracks for good measure. So when you buy the Traditional Duet CD, you are going to get a CD of Traditional Duets, period. The only proviso being traditional can be in the eye or ear of the beholder. Linda Dawson.
Traditional is a word that I think has as much meaning to the person hearing it as it does to the person saying it. What's traditional to you may not be traditional to someone else. And if I play this for my relatives in New Jersey, they're thinking Everly Brothers and old 50s stuff. If I play it for, you know, someone in the Midwest, they might think something else. So for us, quite honestly, the songs that are on here are, in our history, what we consider traditional. Because of the way we've come up in the bluegrass world and in the old time and country music world, these are the songs that got passed down to us from people that we really respect and admire.
And that's all very true. My definition of traditional music has run along the lines of something that came out of the mountains a century or two ago that nobody knows who wrote it, but everyone knows how to play it. That's why I'm not a musicologist. Well, there's plenty of my definition of traditional music on Traditional Duets, but there's also plenty of traditional music that falls under Linda Dawson's description, songs passed down to them as they came up in the music world.
As a songwriter, mm-hmm. I find Bill Monroe to be one of the most inspiring people for me, because his songs that he created, not only did he create them for himself and for his band, but it started a whole new genre of music. I love listening to old Bill Monroe recordings and tunes and the energy that he puts into those songs. You hear those same songs today done by other artists, but when you hear Bill Monroe sing the songs that he wrote, it just grabs you in a different way.
Tell me, please tell me.
Tell me, please tell me.
Why you betrayed dark as a night.
Bill Monroe music is probably a good time to note that while Traditional Duets is the first CD by Linda Dawson and Patty Hopkins, it's not their first recorded effort together. They record and perform with the Raleigh bluegrass band, the Kickin' Grass Band, Linda since its inception 12 years ago, and Patty is the newbie in the band with 4 years. So that's how they met, but performing as a duo was essentially a happy accident. The final year the International Bluegrass Music Association held its convention in Nashville prior to moving to Raleigh in 2013, Linda Dawson organized a Raleigh room there, which she assumed Kickin' Grass would perform at. Patty Hopkins.
We had never played as a duo before, and we assumed that we would take the Kickin' Grass band, but the boys weren't able to come. So we just went as a female duo and actually landed an international festival off of that particular performance. So we thought, hey, we may want to keep going with this project.
Which they did, hence the CD I'm talking about. Performing with Kickin' Grass, they were familiar with performing together, but performing together alone was another story. Linda Dawson.
Well, one thing that we found when we started playing as a duo together was the intimacy that it brought, and also the exposure. When you don't have a full five-piece lineup to hide behind and all that hot picking to carry you, you really have to be very thoughtful about the arrangements you choose, and that's both vocally and instrumentally.
Done all I can do. Said all I can say. Gonna see my honey next payday. Ain't got no use for a little red rocking chair. Got no sugar, honey.
When they first started performing as a duo, there were duo versions of songs performed with Kickin' Grass, as well as some of Linda's own compositions. For this project, though, it's solely, well, traditional duets. There's that great music, boring title again. Most songs, they tried to stay fairly close to the original. Some of the tunes, because they were well and often performed, got a little interpretive.
Distant Land of Rome, we did try and stick pretty close to that because we loved it.
We did. We loved the
and
arrangement.
And we wanted to do it. But songs like Cold Rain and Snow, that's a song that, you know, you can hear the Grateful Dead do that. Del McCurry does it. The original version, the Obray Ramsey version, is very different. And we kind of made up our own arrangement of that, the rhythm on that, the vocal harmonies. We even changed
lyrics.
Some of the words
mm-hmm.
to be from the female perspective. So some of the songs we truly just created our own sound for because we wanted to. But then other ones that we really loved something about, we might want to capture that. We sticked with it.
Windstorm blow, and I'm going where those chilly winds don't blow.
They say about 50% of their traditional repertoire were songs they both were very familiar with, while the rest came from one side or the other. And then there's the occasional nugget uncovered when looking outside their own storehouse of material, such as the traditional tune Beautiful Hills of Galilee they first heard performed by Hazel Dickens.
Beautiful Hills of Galilee, mm-hmm. Patty and I had never heard until this project. And when we heard it, it instantly resonated with both of us, and so we worked up our own version of it. But I have to be honest with you, we didn't even know the words when we went into the studio.
That's right.
We learned this song specifically for this record, and that's exciting and new for us.
Lay all else down, come follow me, my love will last through endless day.
Well, the only a cappella track on the disc, Beautiful Hills of Galilee, might best represent what the disc is about. Both musicians have impressive credentials, particularly Patty with study at ECU, as well as with Mark O'Connor and Bobby Hicks, who played fiddle with Bill Monroe's Bluegrass Boys. Nevertheless, those instrumental credentials never really get a chance to shine on traditional duets, as Linda and Patty both agreed, where the song is the thing.
I play to the project, and I felt this project, as far as the traditional duets project, I felt like it needed the simplicity of the fiddle lines. A lot of it, I felt like, didn't need that hot bluegrass picking into the track. I just felt like the track didn't need it. It's always interesting how it forms and how it really ends up, the final product ends up happening. So when I reflect on this project, I do think about the vocals a lot. I think about the way that our vocals fit together, and everything plays a vital role. I feel like, not to say in the future that we won't get a little hot picking in there.
Rain on the island here that was so cold. Go and tell my true love, sick and I can go. Sick and I can go, love, sick and I can go.
The new CD from Raleigh's Linda Dawson and Greenville's Patty Hopkins is called Traditional Duets. I'm George Olson.
Rain on the island, Lord, I've heard a cry. Go and tell my true love, so lonesome I could die. Lonesome I could die, love, lonesome I could die. Rain on the island, boys, you make a time. Go and tell my true love, going down the line. Coming down the line, love, coming down the line.
Thanks for listening to the Down East Journal this week. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for features that you'd like to hear on DEJ, drop us a line at publicradioeast.org.